It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
All right, and here we go, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all along. Good to see my partner, my friend, Captain Mike Ward.
Sean, how you doing? I know you've had a great week.
Yeah, man, it was a great week. Got to extend turkey hunting, some politics in the mix, but got to extend the turkey hunts.
Turkey hunting, that don't mix.
They mix quite well, I guess. The governor's one-shot turkey hunt. I want to talk about that in a little bit. We will talk some turkey on today's show as we're now, remember we talked about this many times. You decoy folks, you're now good to go.
Yep.
Decoys are legal now. We're past the 10 days, and decoys are legal.
I had that discussion with a real good friend of mine Thursday and wanting to know when they could start using decoys because they thought that, you know, it was going to be
yesterday was the start, yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, it's the 1st of April, so that was yesterday.
Yes, so, mm-hmm. It's back, and I want to talk about that, too. We're talking about this governor or something. Maybe I'll talk about a specific hunt, and then I can back up into what happened with that and also – my man, Captain Mike Ward's been stacking gobblers.
Well, we both halfway home.
Yeah, we are both halfway home. But it was interesting. So I talked about this decoy thing. So I was on the governor's one-shot turkey hunt. And I got invited to the thing. You go up on Monday. Okay, you go up on Monday, and there's a big party there, kind of thing. You know me. Well enough that I'm just itching for that to be over, so we can go hunting. I'd rather be at a camp house than a big, but it had a auction and raffles and events and stuff, and a neat mix of people from outside the state and businesses inside the state that have done a lot for the state, and are there and are represented, and they do a pairing deal. So you have to, but they don't let you know right away. You have to do all the other stuff first, and then they pair you with the landowner,
right?
Which, in coming up on Midday Mobile, hopefully later this month, the person's property I was sent with turned out to be, I was nervous. I'm pretty sure I hunt with my friends, and I'm not used to going with other people.
Sure.
And but the landowner, he wasn't the guy guiding, but the landowner is the guy that started the Robert Trent Jones Golf Trail.
How about that?
A guy named Buddy Vaughn, just a heck of a guy. Yeah. Nice guy. Really, really interesting. I mean, as much as hunting the land, I had just a great time visiting with this guy, and hopefully he's going to be on the on Midday Mobile sometime this month. His stories of how, I mean, we all just go, oh, it's the Robert Trent Jones Golf Trail. How'd that start?
Yeah.
What a risk that was, and it was a big boon for the retirement systems of Alabama, but that wasn't a sure thing.
But you should have been on a pretty nice piece of property then.
It was, it's a beautiful place and near Shorter, Alabama. And
what I say?
So we're there, and I was going to say on the decoy side, pretty interesting. So just talk about the hunts, like both days in turkeys, and really I kind of was lucky that I was in turkeys more than I guess the other hunters. There were three of us that were on that property.
A guide, or were you by yourself?
I had a guide, but it was kind of interesting. The guide had never been on the property either. We walked down there with the landowner's son in the dark.
I got you.
To a spot where we were supposed to go.
Yeah.
First morning.
You go that way, you go that way.
No, well, we sat on a tree. Well, they took the other guys to the other part of the property.
Right.
And then my guide, which was, it was weird, ended up being just a great guy. Great guy. And really nice to be around. But it was weird for me. I've never been guided before.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's strange to me. But we're sitting there on the hunting side, to get back on the hunting side. So we're sitting there. And birds fire off, and we're kind of sitting in a wide road off of a green patch. It's almost an extension of the green patch, but a road. And we're sitting there, and birds pitch down. It's good, and have at first a pair of 2-year-olds come in, and I had the safety knocked off. I had them squared.
Yeah.
And problem is, their heads were within 6 inches of each other or less the whole time. And when they didn't see the hen, we'll get back to the decoy thing.
For the twofer?
So Mike, number one, not being legal, and number two, being on a piece of property where a man you met the night before Well, no, I did not.
You're not planning on going back anyway, are you?
Well said, well said. But I chose not to shoot. The guide was like, no, man, he said,
I'm picking.
So I'm looking at, yeah, so we're sitting there, and they came down, you know, 15 steps. But I just, they turned and went on another little road and went through a thicket and got, and what, 30 yards in, on the other side of the thicket and started gobbling again. But it was one of those situations where if there had been a decoy there, they'd have stuck around. Yeah, they did what turkeys do. They come to see the hen. If the hen's not there, after a while, they get nervous and walk off.
That's right.
I mean, the hen's not there. So those two birds, you know, I'd have killed one of those birds if there had been a decoy there. Because we're just talking about how they put this thing in for the 10 days of no decoys to try to let a few more mature gobblers breed hens before they get killed. And so there's a situation that even though it's weird, it didn't bring the birds in, it would have made them stay around long enough to split up to get one shot.
Right. They would have danced around a decoy a little bit.
I could have
separated
shot
a little bit. Right.
And listen, I don't pack a decoy all the time. Actually, it's probably 20% of the time if I'm dealing with usually pasture birds is where that comes into handy. But if I'm not doing that, I don't carry one. But there's a situation that there would have been a dead bird. I'm one little bit, but I wonder how many times stories like that happened, you know, for the beginning of turkey season all across the state, that there are turkeys that didn't get killed for that situation. Then the next morning, and they had other great hunts and, you know, had goblin birds we chased around or whatever. But next morning, we back to the return to the scene of the crime where those birds were roosting in there. Then had that yesterday, that would have been Wednesday morning. I had four hens at about 10 steps cackling, chasing each other around. I mean, big time. I mean,
Putting on a show. Yep.
Have two come out at about 100 yards.
Gobblers,
yeah.
Okay.
And one was a strutter. And I have a whole other joke about that because he didn't seem interested in girls. He and the other one, the one strut, one didn't. And then they turned around and walked back in the woods and didn't come to those hens. So
they've been listening to CNN.
Yeah. So maybe my theory about them, you know, coming to the decoy is wrong because I had four live hens at 10 steps and they had no interest. But had great hunts, cool piece of property, cool experience, good people to be with. So, yeah, the governor's one-shot turkey hunt. Saw a lot of folks up there, folks you know, and people like Rob Keck was
Rob,
there.
Yeah,
he was I think he got second in the contest.
Yeah.
He killed
him. I like Rob. Rob's a nice guy. He's the head of Bass Pro Shop now.
Right. And
yeah. I think he's the CEO, isn't he?
I think he may be.
I think he's CEO of Bass Pro Shop. I'm pretty sure he is. But great guy. I've been knowing him a long, long time.
So he hunted, listen to this. So he hunts with a buddy of mine who I was hoping I was going to end up hunting with, but they pair you with, and I'm happy that I got to meet a new person, even though as of Monday, I'm like, I'd rather go with my buddy. But
yeah.
he was in the same area and got to be around Rob some. So he tells a story. Rob tells a story about, because my buddy who has, this friend of mine, his grandfather made the first call that Ben Rogers Lee ever had.
Now, that's an old-timer there.
It's old school. Folks in Millery.
Yeah.
People
don't know Ben Roger Lee. I mean, he's a legend, especially in Alabama, but all over the country, too. But he's really a legend in Alabama.
Yeah, he was
turkey hunter.
He was one of our—
a storyteller.
Yes. And if you want to talk about, like, our turkey hunting pedigree in this state and kind of the story of turkey hunting here, there's a lot of names that come up, but one of them definitely is Ben Rogers Lee.
Right.
So he started talking to Rob Keck about that because he knew that Rob knew Ben Rogers Lee. Rob Keck from Pennsylvania comes down in 1968 to Coosa County to hunt public land down here. Kills a turkey down here because they just had fall season at that point, I think, in Pennsylvania. Killed a spring turkey down here, Coosa County. And he then liked the state or whatever and started entering in the calling competition here in Mobile. Of course, it's back now,
right.
But this was back in its first iteration. He came down and won a lot there. And guess he fell in with – met Ben Rogers Lee at this and fell in with him. And they started – so he was showing my buddy pictures of them, Ben Rogers Lee and Rob Keck, trapping fur and turkey hunting in the 1970s in Alabama.
How about that?
So it's pretty cool.
That is really, I didn't know that about Rob.
Yeah. So by the way, too, Rob's bird was number two. I got my list here. Here's the stats on his. The word got out through the Redneck Coconut Telegraph when we were up there that Rob had killed a good one. And I was getting the text here, but here's the final on it. He was number two in the lead, in the competition, 22.11 pound turkey. Okay.
Big turkey.
Left spur. I got to get my glasses to resume this. Inch and a quarter, left spur. Right spur at 1.375 inches.
Yeah.
Beard, 10 inches. It's a heck of a turkey.
That's a great turkey.
Linda Powell, if nothing changed after I saw this thing last week, Linda Powell was number one. You ready? This is Alabama, y'all. This is Alabama hunt. 25.13 pound gobbler.
That's a really, really big one.
I don't think I've ever killed a 25 pound gobbler in Alabama.
I'm not sure. I don't think I have either.
Left spur.
I don't weigh them all, but I don't think I have.
But it wasn't that big. I killed one 21 pounds the other day.
Yeah.
And it was big enough that I was like, I'm going to weigh this joker.
Yeah.
Just looking at him. This is a 25.13 pound. Left spur, 1.125 inches. Right spur, 1.125 inches. Beard, 11 and three quarters.
That's a winner.
So there's some of the. And then a guy who's met this guy. He's fished with you and I before. Joey Dobbs, Conservation Advisory Board.
Yeah.
Remember?
Mm-hmm. Remember Joey?
Yeah. He killed 20.34 pound turkey with an inch and a quarter left spur, inch and a quarter right spur, and a 10.375 inch beard.
So he came in third.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But so there's some of the roundup in that. But yeah, so on the decoy thing, it was just interesting because I think that first day, if we would have been running decoys, which I don't know
but
if we
you
would
may
have
not,
or not.
You may not have been.
Yeah, though. Probably That's... wouldn't have. Well, I wouldn't. I didn't know where we were hunting, but
right.
That would have killed that would have killed a turkey. The next day, I had the live thing next to me, and it didn't make a difference. So
yeah.
But I had a great time. We were in turkeys the whole time. We'll come back and talk about the turkeys we have killed. And
yep.
Which, by the way, y'all can always send us a picture, put it on our Facebook page, facebook.com/FMTalk1065Outdoors. Make sure to put the outdoors on there. Check it out. Leave us a turkey pic on there. Coming right back. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, brought to you in part by McConnell Buick GMC. And so, yeah, Governor's one-shot turkey hunt was, I hope I get invited back. I mean, I'd said that the story, by the way, turkey hunting stories, even when you're the guy that started the Robert Trent Jones Golf Trail, I heard my story being told at a dinner we had, that was on Tuesday night, a regional dinner.
Yeah.
Spring Bank up on Lake Martin. Yeah. What a restaurant. What a restaurant, man, to have like in the middle of the hills up there. Great stuff. But
yeah,
the story that had turned it, because after those two-year-olds came in, and the guide and I had met about 45 minutes, before light, or we met 15 minutes before light, and it was 45 minutes in, and a couple of Jakes came in. He's like, you can shoot those. I'm like, nah.
Yeah,
I can shoot those. And so when he got back up and told the story, then the story turned into that night. Sean Sullivan had five turkeys in a row in a line and wouldn't shoot them. That was the discussion. I was like, well, does that get me invited back? And he said yes. So hopefully I get to go back.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. I've done it one time, the governor's hunt one time.
Where'd you hunt?
Well, Mickey Platt asked me if I would take one of the people hunting on his place,
right,
in Lowndes County, and I did. And great, just like you're talking about, great guy that I had that I don't even remember now exactly who he was. But our problem was it was like Thursday weather came through, only it stayed for a day and a half.
Yeah.
I mean, it was thundering and lightning and storming and tornado warnings. And we did get out and hunt one morning, and, I was right next to the property line and calling one up. And we saw him come over a little ridge, and he went down in a little bottom and getting ready to top out and be on our property. And right before he topped out and came on our property, the neighbor shot him. So anyway, that was a turkey story on that deal. But that's a great deal. The governor's hunt up there.
I got to meet a lot of people.
Yeah, I'm sure probably Eddie Salter was up there.
I didn't see Eddie, but I did not see Eddie. I saw some guys from and he could have been, but I didn't hear his name. Jimmy Primos, they said his name. I didn't see Jimmy, but he was there. I tell you, Jackie Bushman.
Yeah.
Jackie sat there for a while. He was there. Some people from Tecumseh, like Bucks of Tecumseh, they were there. There's people from the hunting you know, hunting world.
They come from all over.
Yeah, to come do this hunt. It was a good thing. By the way, I got some numbers here from our friend who's head of wildlife and freshwater fisheries, Chuck Sykes. 18 birds killed, 64 hunters. So there you go. There's the...
That's pretty good.
Yeah, 18 out of 64 hunters. And, of course, I'm not going to read you the rest of the text.
You could have been 20 if you'd have pulled the trigger, Sean.
Yes, I know. Thank you. Listen, I'm getting enough grief there. Let's talk about what's been going on. So your hunts, you had a... By the way, we knew it was coming. We talked about it in previous shows or previous show. We got the first 3 days of turkey season could not have been better weather.
It was as good as it gets, John.
I mean,
good as it gets.
It
in the low 40s where we were, and then warmed up into the low 70s, high 60s.
Perfect.
It was perfect. And let me tell you, there was a lot of birds died.
Yeah,
a lot of them. I heard a lot of shots. There was a lot of them died. So it was a great weekend, this past weekend.
You have pretty high volume of goblin?
Yeah, we did. I think every day I went, I heard at least four or five.
Right.
And, you know, probably the best day, maybe about eight, give or take a little bit.
That's good.
Yeah, so it was. I had a great weekend. What about you?
Yeah,
you hear many? I'm talking about here in Mobile now.
Right.
Where you hunt at. Out.
Right, before I went to the governor's thing. Yeah, it was pretty incredible.
Yeah.
I had pretty good... Pretty incredible goblin. Yeah. And I was just saying, you know, had great people who don't turkey hunt don't get it. They're like, well, you didn't kill one Friday and you didn't kill one Saturday and you're happy. I'm like, because this happened or this happened, you know, I had awesome hunts.
Yeah.
You know, just like got everything you could want in it without pulling a trigger, which it, you know, now do I like to kill them? You darn right. I still like
well,
to kill
sure
them.
We
but
do.
But I tell you what, I would take by Friday and Saturday hunt from last week, I killed on Sunday, but I'd have taken those hunts. And instead of one where the bird never gobbled and came in and got killed.
Yeah.
I agree.
I mean, it's not just about to kill. We all want to kill.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not out there to bird watch.
But, man, it's all about the gobbling and the drumming and the strutting and all that stuff.
And playing the game.
Fighting and, you know, all the things that they do. I mean, that's a big part of it. And if you can go away and you've had them come up close to you and they drumming and gobbling and strutting and fighting and doing all that kind of stuff, I mean, you've had a great hunt. I don't have to come out of there with a bird.
Would your birds end up there, or
well,
what'd you see?
You know, Sean, I tell everybody on my turkey hunt, and I've told you 1,000 times, people have heard it on this radio show, I kill them by patience.
You do. Ward is the – let me say this. Let me come in off the top rope here. I've hunted with Mike, the most patient turkey hunter has ever been.
Most people won't hunt with me because I go – and I see it, and I stay in one spot.
Because Mike will tell you they're going to come back, and they do.
Yeah, and not to say that sometimes now I'm going to get up and go because I know there's one right over here.
Well, if one's blowing the paint off the walls,
And I can get around on him without spooking him and everything. Now, I'm going to do that. But when the goblin's kind of slacked up, and I know I've been right here where the goblin's been, and I know – Well, the first day, that's what happened. I heard two goblin. They gobbled, I mean, from daylight to probably 8:30 or so. I mean, just hammering it. And I just stayed there, you know, and I heard others gobble on, you know, round, on down, you know, 500 yards, 600, 800 yards, whatever. And I just stayed there in one spot, daylight to 11 o'clock. At 11 o'clock,
Ooh, man.
11 o'clock, I hear a I said, oh. And I'm, you know, when he first does that and it kind of shocks you.
Then you're trying to figure out where that sound
comes
from.
I'm looking because I said, that's out in front of me. And I'm just looking out in front of me and I don't see anything. So, you know, here it goes again. I said, oh.
Behind you?
He's directly behind
me. Oh, man.
So I'm easing my head around, easing around. And by the time I get to where I can see that there's a turkey, a gobbler, I see another gobbler. And then they start fighting. And as soon as they start fighting,
then
I'm just turning on around.
Yeah, you can get around. They're distracted.
They were paying no attention to me.
Right.
So anyway, I spun on around, and when they broke up and got through fighting, one walked out away from it, and I shot and killed him.
Right.
And I just sat there. I didn't go anywhere. I didn't do anything. I just sat there and let the other – I could have killed the other one, of course. It's illegal. But I just sat there and watched him and everything, and then he went on off. And I'm still just sitting there, and it maybe 10 minutes goes by, and here comes six Jakes. Well, they heard that turkey flopping.
Right.
They heard them fighting, I guess, and probably heard that one I shot was flopping, on the ground. And maybe it wasn't 10 minutes, but it's probably 5 minutes. And here they come, boy, and got right up on a stump right where that turkey was. They were looking and yipping and everything, looking for,
purring, getting ready to whip them.
And I don't know if they saw my dead turkey or not.
Didn't jump them? Okay.
No, because of that. Because a lot of times when they see one, he stopped flopping.
Okay.
He was just dead on the ground at this time. And they were right there by him and looking, and they stayed there for, to a couple minutes at least, maybe longer.
Right.
And then they ended up walking off. But if he'd ever flipped one time,
every
one of those Jakes would have been over there on top of him trying to kill him.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that was my first kill. And that was a great hunt.
Yeah.
I mean, just a great hunt. So patience killed that turkey.
Yeah.
Had I got up at 10 o'clock or 9 o'clock or 8 o'clock.
You're right.
Most people, 8 o'clock, that's it. I mean, daylight to 8 o'clock, they can't stand no longer. They got to get up. They got to move, got to go, got to do something different.
Mm-hmm.
If I know I'm around turkeys and I'm yipping every now and then light, I'm not putting on no big yipping show. Every now and then, 15, 20 minutes, I'll do a light little yip or a little cluck or something. And for me, that kills turkeys.
Now, and it something that seems as simple as doing it Mike's way is, we've talked about it before, but the amount of cushioning you carry.
Oh, yes.
To sit on.
Yes. There's a reason I can sit there.
Mike has got y'all's couch at the house isn't as comfortable as what Mike's sitting on.
And I'll tell you a story about the boy I took hunting with me He killed one. We both killed one. But anyway, yes, I carry a turkey chair, a turkey seat.
Just the beginning, y'all.
Yeah, you fold it out and you sit on the ground. You're not sitting on the ground. You're sitting off the ground maybe 4 or 5 inches or so, and it's got a back to it.
Then what, Mike?
Then I have a thick cushion
That's
got a back cushion to it.
Yes.
Okay? That I bought years ago when I was in the sporting goods business, and I wouldn't sell you one of those suckers for nothing. Now, I can tell you that for sure. So anyway, I've got a back cushion in that backrest of that chair, and I've got a really nice seat cushion, okay? And I've got a blind up. I put a blind. Most of the time,
now,
when I'm sitting there a long time, I usually will put me a blind up.
So Mike pulls a trailer in behind him when he's turkey hunting to bring all the infrastructure for it. But I tell you right now, it makes a difference.
Oh,
being
yes.
able to sit there.
Oh, it makes all the difference in the world. If I was sitting on the ground, just maybe a light cushion or something, there's no way I could stay there that long.
I'm double cushion. I got the cushion. Well, it's really not. It's the seat that's built into the vest I'm running now. I've got multiple vests. And then I have a cushion I throw down and sit on.
If you're gonna run and gun,
yeah. Now, if I knew I'm sitting, I've got the chair,
yeah.
And I got, but.
But now, if I'm gonna run a gun, if I need to get up and go, I'm gonna grab my cushion, and my gun, and I'm gone.
Right.
I'll just
come back and get the.
I'll leave the blind.
Get the living room suite later.
All that stuff later on. I'll just grab what I got to get and I'll go, and I do that every now and then.
Yeah, it's funny to think about. I try to do it at the beginning of the season this year versus what I always do towards the end is where I start taking stuff out of my vest. Like, you got all this stuff, and then you go, okay, I really don't need this. I really don't need this. I really don't. I got my buddy I hunt with all the time. He said, if I gave you a Primo's true double yelper, he said, you don't need that. You need that in a cushion.
Yeah.
Because I could owl with my mouth, I still carry an owl call, but I mean, I could owl with my mouth and have a, yelper, but I feel naked if I don't have all the other stuff.
There's a lot of other
but
stuff
I
got to carry.
But I cull it back some.
Yeah, I mean, you got to have bug spray.
Yeah.
You got to have bug in his natural, we sell at the store, too. We need
let's
to talk
do that.
About that a second.
Well, let's do that before, because we'll have Captain Wayne Miller coming up shortly. I'll push this off here. Let's talk about that, because I explained that to the guys up there who had, by the way, that group of people up there, they've never dealt with bull gnats.
Yes.
And there's one guy in the camp that had, and I'm telling the story, and they're all looking at me like I'm crazy, and they go, this guy's telling the truth. But, thermocells are great for keeping mosquitoes away.
Oh, yeah, they're perfect.
And I carry a thermocell. But the bull gnat will come lick a thermocell.
Yes.
He is not scared of that. And whatever off you have, I don't care if you have off 8,000 deepest heart of darkness woods, doesn't matter.
Makes no difference.
Bull gnats or a different creature. So this stuff, Buggin's Natural, that I've been using for years, obviously you've been using longer than me, is the difference.
It is. It'll make the difference whether you can stay in the woods and hunt or you got to come out and go home.
Yeah.
Because if you come out and you got 1,000 big old webs on your head.
Looks like you got the measles.
And your eyes, you can't hardly see because they're swollen shut. You would love to have a bottle of Buggin's Natural.
Yeah, and it smells like lemon.
It's got a sweet smell.
But so, and I've told this story before in the past that the thing that sold me on this years ago was the fact that I knew it worked because it wore off. Meaning, if you put something on, and then you never have any bull gnats come to you, you may guess that maybe that wasn't a bad morning for it or whatever. But you know, I'd put this on. I hunted in the river swamp for so long where I dealt with the bull gnats, you know, and the same thing in the Black Belt. But the river swamp and the Black Belt, certain kind of mud has worse, you know, bull gnats. I'd get out there, bull gnats weren't bothering me. All of a sudden, they'd start bothering me. I'd spray this stuff on, and I went from having bull gnats all over me to none.
Right.
And that's kind of like it. That's what sold me on it. If it was something that I had, it never wore off, then I wouldn't understand that it worked. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Like, then after about 45 minutes, it starts wearing down a little bit.
Right.
And they start kind of getting close to you and buzzing around you. And then you just take it and hit it again around your
face.
That's what lets you know it's working.
And
then they're gone again. Yeah. And then about 45 minutes later, they start kind of getting close to you and buzzing you. And you just spray it again. So you're right. That's a great way to tell that it does work.
Because if it never – you're right. I wouldn't like – If I put it on in the morning and never had a bull gnat, I'd be like, well, they just weren't any bull gnats or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
But knowing, y'all got stock on it right now at the store?
We got some, and actually Sarah told me that she's got some more ordered.
Okay, so right there at the big safe, Mike Ward's Liberty Safes. You know, check some safes out while you're there. But Buggin's Natural.
Buy two safes and get a Buggin's Natural free.
He's making deals, man. That's fantastic. All right, so let's intermix in our turkey hunting talk some bass fishing. We got Rivers High, where you can go find some bass fishing. Well, I know a guy who knows something about that. Wayne Miller is going to join us coming up next. All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you along. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, checking in with our buddy Captain Wayne Miller. Yeah, so during the news break there, we still have for next week's show, and hopefully we'll have more hunts to add to it. We have some pretty good stories. I'll just say, shoot them like you sit.
Yep.
Or the other thing I got in a discussion of in the last week or so was the, because people were talking about doubles, shooting doubles. I said, well, do you shoot on three? And they said, well, yeah, shoot. I said, so do you shoot on, is three the shoot, or do you go one, two, three, shoot, or do you go one, two, and then three is actually the trigger pull?
Yeah, when it starts coming out of your mouth, or
yeah,
what do you do?
Yeah, so I mean, and which turkey are you shooting? Yes, there's the world of trying to shoot a double is a whole nother discussion.
We got a really good story for next week, okay?
Next week
it's going to be good. And I hope me and you both got more turkey stories to talk about. We hadn't talked about your turkeys that you killed, so we got to talk about that too. So
All right. We
both had good weeks on turkey hunting, but our buddy here.
Let's ask Captain Wayne, how many turkeys did you kill?
Well, I hadn't gotten any, but guys, the turkeys all be up on the highway because they're not down on the riverbank. I can tell you that.
That's for sure. That's why we were saying, man, we got to talk to Captain Wayne because if y'all hadn't looked, the water's up, and if you want to go bass fishing, well, we got to find out from Captain Wayne where you can go do it. Yeah, we got it wasn't as bad as years past, but we're back to some flooded conditions in the Delta.
Oh yeah, I laughed. I think it was Thursday. You know, I looked at the river stages and the Claiborne reading and the Coffeyville reading on the Alabama and the Tom Digby, respectively. Both of them were 34. So when you see that, you really don't even want to look at the Barry steam plant reading.
Yeah, it got up pretty close to 10 there. So
it bumped up. And they actually crested, I think, yesterday, Friday, at about 9-6, but we got a fall on it. So really what that means for the Delta, all our lakes in the middle, and I'm primarily referencing those up in the I-65 area, you know, all those are blowing through, so they're muddy and pretty much not fishable. But we still got, you know, fishable water down south. Now, I won't tell you that it's in real good shape because it's not, but you still can go out and catch fish. I mean, the water temperatures are in the upper 60s, low 70s, so even with the water being stained or muddy, there's still considerable numbers of fish up in that skinny water. So, you know, they're wanting to pull up. And our next full moon, I think, is around the 15th of this month.
That's what I'm fixing to ask you about. Yeah, are they spawning? Not what's going on?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're wide open, and we'll see. What I think will probably be the biggest push of the year for this next full moon, I think we'll see more, you know, bass spawn on this particular cycle than we have, you know, the previous full moon. So, you know, if we can just get this water down a little bit, man, the fishing will be wide open. But, you know, right now it's, you know, just a little tough, and most people are having to, you know, obviously just concentrate on that lower end. But, you know, something I'll mention too, man, anybody that's getting out, you know, if you just want to go ride or if you're fishing, whatever, man, there is a tremendous amount of, you know, material, you know, logs, limbs, stumps, you
trees,
know, everything you can imagine coming down these rivers. So you really need to be careful.
Yeah. So right now, are you fishing in like the bays right now, or are you fishing in the creeks a little bit?
The bays. I mean, we're catching quite a few fish in the bays. You know, the biggest challenge with the bays, though, Mike, with such limited water, man, I mean, they fill up so fast. So, I mean, you know, obviously one of the big springtime patterns here is to go in those bays and fish the duck blinds.
Sure.
But, you know, everybody and their brother happens to know that particular pattern. So it's kind of like taking a number and, you know, waiting your turn to get in there to it.
So, yeah, and the grass filters that dirty water out.
Oh,
you know,
really
fairly good and quick. So that makes it where it's fishable, where sometimes the creeks.
One of the things that you can do is, you know, and I'm not saying it's easy to do, but due to the fact that, you know, you do have that little bit more stained water, even, you know, in the bays where you got all that grass, you know, sometimes you just have to slow down with that plastic and really pick it apart. You know, I mean, everybody loves to just do a drift and throw a spinnerbait and catch them. And at times that'll work, especially, you know, when the water's up over that grass good.
Yeah.
But there are other times when you guys both know how these bass react. Sometimes they just bury up, and it's like, you know, you got to stick something on their nose to make them eat.
That's right.
Well, and, yeah, go ahead. I just want to talk about you're talking about the drifting thing. I think that's worth discussing. One of my favorite ways to catch bass.
Me too.
In the bays down there along the causeway. You know, do the old – I mean, if I use a trolling motor, it was just to kind of keep on line. I'm letting the wind push me. What is the prime condition? You mentioned the water up – like, if you had to describe – and I mean, listen, I'll say names of bays. There's lots of bays down there. If you're in a Polecat, or you're in Delvan, or you're in Chocolata, or you're in Ducker, or whatever. Because people are like – yeah, if you're – these are not unknown places.
Right.
So if you're going to fish that, when do you pull in there as Captain Wayne Miller and go, okay, it's set up. This is going to be good on the drift side.
Well, you know, the conditions we have right now are pretty much optimum for that in that, you know, you've got tons of this, you know, really nasty, muddy water. But the water is puffed up, and we have primarily just had a south wind. So it just pushes additional water into these bays. Well, you know, the neat thing about these fish, when they pull into those bays to spawn, once they make that migration, they're not coming out.
Right.
So, irregardless of whether the water goes up or down, those fish just stay there. If it gets extremely low, if we have, you know, like a northern front come through, you know, they'll just bury in that grass. But when you have the conditions like we're experiencing now where you have that water that really puffs up, What that enables you to do is, number one, you can access even the head of some of the bays that typically you can't get a bass boat in.
Right, shallow spots.
You, you can't even put a trolling motor down and get to them. Well, now you can. So, you know, and not only that, you know, you have the opportunity, just like we're talking about drift fishing, I try to minimize the use of that trolling motor as much as possible, because you're talking about extremely shallow water, and it's easy to spook those fish. So, you know, on a drift, especially if you got two guys, you know, it doesn't take, you know, typically you can make one or two drifts and have one guy throwing one color spinnerbait and maybe the other guy throwing a lizard or something. And, you know, it really helps you to determine a pattern relatively, you know, fast in one of the bays. And, man, if you can ever figure out, I mean, I don't have to tell y'all that. I mean, y'all have done it just like I have. Tons of times, if you can figure out what they want, man, you can wreck them.
And but it's for people to think about it. It's even though you talked about maybe have to shift tactics and go after with soft plastics and go after duck blinds, this is just covering water.
Yeah,
when you do this, this is just the more cast, the more fish you can be in front of. You know, and sometimes we've talked about this before. I used to have in my little 14-foot boat, I'd put out a little drift sock on the windy days to slow me down a little bit for getting coverage there, just more before I had to motor back up and do it again. But, it's like a numbers game, right? You're just covering water.
Yeah. And, you know, the amazing thing, you know, if you ever get in one of those bays when it's really turned on, you come to the realization just literally how many thousands of fish there have to be in there. So, you know, they can't all congregate in, you know, the northeast corner or, you know, the southwest corner. I mean, to a degree, they're spread out because it's basically just a bowl. So, you know, that works in your favor when you're using these techniques we're talking about, like the drifting.
All right, we're going to pick this up. We're coming right back more with Captain Wayne Miller and talk about more that you can do, because it's spring and there's bass on a lot of people's brain. I'm raising my hand. We'll do that when we come back right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. What if you're not ready to hook up whether you got a super awesome bass boat like Captain Wayne, or you got a, you know, like I used to fish that kind of this pattern we're talking about. I used to fish this out of that 13-foot Lesarge of mine as a boy, you know, because you really didn't have to have it was drifting and casting.
Really nothing to it.
Yeah. So, I mean, Captain Wayne, this is any of this stuff is for everybody around here. If you got a boat, something that can float, there's fish to be had. But this is really one of those places that in this pattern, whether you're in a 14-foot duck boat drifting or you're in a big fine bass boat, this is a good pattern.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, it's funny you mention that about a smaller boat, because I've had times when I've seen little bitty boats come zooming by me and go on to the head of the bay, and I'm like, man, I wish I could do that.
Yeah.
You know, and they catch fish, too. So,
yeah, sometimes, you know, the bigger's not better.
It's a big advantage to have those, you know, smaller boats.
Well, especially you're talking about the thousands of fish that are in these bays. In this pattern, it's not, you know, as crucial like a boat you have to be able to go, okay, we're going to fish this at this tide cycle, then we're going 5 miles up the river to do this, and then we're going over there. It's kind of like, as long as you got that wind and you got that tidal movement, for that period of time, you just make a drift, go run up, you know, make another drift. And you know, this is something we talk about in speckled trout fishing with Captain Bobby, but I want to talk about with you. In that scenario, y'all just take care. Just treat other people like you'd be treated. Don't run through somebody's drift.
Yeah.
You know, just act right. I mean,
I don't think how many times you could tell somebody that they'd really grasp what you're talking about.
Because it doesn't say whether you're speckled trout
fishing, red fishing, or bass fishing. I just don't think they comprehend sometimes.
If a man is drifting a direction, y'all, go another way around to get up above him. You don't get below him on the drift. You don't run through his drift. You go get above him, and then you get your own drift.
Yeah.
Y'all get the drift?
Well, you know, the real advantage to that, too, is, and, you know, a lot of people don't do it, but I guarantee, buddy, I take advantage of it. I love it when I've got people within sight of me in those bays because I'm paying attention, you know, because you'll see when they catch fish. Well, if they're catching more fish than you are, you know, and you can figure out, well, you know, that's not a spinnerbait they're throwing. That's a, they're ripping a rattle trap over the top of that grass, or they're throwing a chatterbait. Then, you know, you can make a change, and sometimes it works in your favor to have additional boats around you. But, you know, you definitely want to do, just like you said, I mean, you know, don't cut somebody off, because one thing about Mobile, most of these guys, they don't mind getting confrontational. Myself included, unfortunately, I'm not proud of that. But, you know, we usually speak our minds, so that, you know, it's, to avoid those situations, you know, just, you know, give people room.
Yeah.
But actually it does work in your favor sometimes to have additional people in the area.
Oh, if somebody's beside, listen, on a drift, if you're, we could be in talking distance, you know, I mean, as long as our cast aren't near, that's fine. If we're drifting at the same pace, it's the person who gets in front of your drift that is.
Right, between is, you yeah. and
yeah,
that other
yeah,
boat.
Yeah, that's yeah. the,
but,
that's
but
the issue.
But, you know, something else that, you know, I think is worth mentioning, too, is, you know, and I found this over the years, especially when the bay is really cranked and, you know, that pattern gets good. You know, I've made big, long drifts across one of the bays, you know, and maybe I'll be throwing a Bruiser Sally with a white twin tail, and, you know, I catch just a pile of fish. Well, when I go to make that drift the next time, I may make the exact same drift. I may go to the exact same area to come through again, and I'll just make one slight change. I may go to a, you know, a chartreuse twin tail on that Bruiser.
Right.
Or, you know, a real small change on the bait sometimes, and you'll catch additional fish. It, you know, you don't, even though you're making the same drift, you know, it's just so many fish in those areas. And, you know, when you've got that much vegetation, you know, you're not going to present that bait to every fish in
right.
the area as you drift down through there. There's no way you could do it.
So talk about it. So you mentioned, I mean, we've got about a minute and a half left here. So Bruiser Sally, but I mean, if you, I always do this to you, but this fishing bays drifting top three baits, what do you got?
Number one is the Bruiser. You know, I've caught
Snagless Sally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Snagless Sally and the Bruiser color. And, you know, I experiment with the trailer, the color, you know, number two is a lizard. You know me, I love the watermelon chartreuse lizard. You know, I've got two of those on the deck this time of year, not just one.
Right.
I've got two of them. And the third bait would be a chatterbait. And, you know, I try different colors in them, but I really like a black and blue. And also, you know, just a shad color, too, you know, primarily a white or shad pattern. But those three baits, you know, I mean, most of the time, if those fish are going to feed down there, you can catch them on one of those.
Right. I mean, why wouldn't you use tell people why you wouldn't use a regular, like a bush hog type spinner bait?
You know, the bush hogs, you know, the safety pin type spinner baits, for the most part, you know, coming through grass, you know, they have a tendency to hang up a lot more than the Snagless Sally does, the inline spinnerbait. I mean, that's really where they shine, especially in cover like ribbon grass. I mean, you know, you just, you know, you work a Sally through that. I mean, it just glides through it. And, you know, most conventional type spinnerbaits, you know, you're constantly, you know, catching grass with them. So,
well said.
You know, that's the primary reason I try to utilize the inline spinners in that situation.
Excellent. All right. Captain Wayne, somebody wants to get a trip booked with you because they can get a heck of an education on all the stuff we're talking about and get to catch a bunch of fish. How do they do it?
They can reach me at 251-455-7404.
That, Wayne, as always, we appreciate your time. We'll be checking back with you soon.
Okay, guys. Y'all have a great one.
Will do. Captain Wayne Miller, and a little taste of what's going on the causeway on the bass side.
Yep, me and you will stay away from the bass fishing. We won't interfere with his fishing right now.
Not down there. I might go hit a pond.
Oh, well, I'm going to hit a pond.
Anything that's close to a turkey.
Yeah.
All right. We'll do it again next week. Remember, check us out. Podcast, post up on our website. Plus, you can get us tonight at 11, and then we do the show again Sunday mornings. So, there you go. See you next week.